Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is USDA Deputy Secretary Jule Bernaugh, who joins us to discuss the department's Equity Commission and this week's farm income forecast. But first, here's this week's headlines. President Joe Biden used his State of the Union address to call for more bipartisan cooperation between the administration and Capitol Hill. Biden's hour-plus-long speech included a few remarks tangential to farm policy, including touting the Ocean Shipping Reform Act, highlighting the conservation spending in the Inflation Reduction Act, and calling on Congress to move forward with legislation to offer a pathway to citizenship for the nation's farm workers. The leader of the House Ag Committee says work requirement debates won't derail his efforts to pass a farm bill. Pennsylvania Republican Glenn G.T. Thompson dismissed the calls from five hardline conservatives for work requirements to be part of a welfare reform efforts. Part of that reason for his dismissal, Thompson told reporters, is because work requirements are already on the books for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Thompson says potentially losing those five votes on final passage shouldn't be an issue, since he plans to move a bill with bipartisan support. And finally, USDA is forecasting net farm income will sharply decline this year due to lower revenue from crops and livestock, as well as stubbornly high production expenses. USDA's Economic Research Service estimated net farm income will drop nearly 16% from last year, and net cash farm income will fall by nearly 21%. Deputy Secretary Jule Bernaugh is USDA's number two official. She says the figures have the department keeping a close eye on producers and the farm economy.
You know, I'm always proud to say that, you know, American producers are just incredibly resilient, and they have an ability to continue to produce, and it's nothing short of remarkable. As you noted on Tuesday, we released our first national level 2023 farm income forecast and a revised national level 2022 forecast. And we developed these forecasts using our most recently available data, the NAS, WASD, BRS analysts, and the 2021 ARMS, which is really USDA's only survey of farm level financial conditions. And, you know, after reaching record highs in 2022, we learned that farm income is forecast to decrease in 2023. So for us at USDA, we're really trying to work to make American agriculture not just the most productive in the world, but also profitable, and not profitable for many, but for everyone. You know, over the last 2 years, we've put in place a plan of action to really focus American agriculture on productivity and profitability, but also sustainability and resilience. Yeah, and we're looking at a couple of ways that, you know, we can do that. One, we're looking at ways to create new and more valuable commodities so producers can benefit from the markets that exist. You know, we have also done work, and we're continuing to look to ways to provide new and better markets for products so that we can create that competition. And, you know, we've promoted U.S. production of key imports. We've expanded disaster assistance for a number of farmers who include limited resource farmers. And we're looking at ways to encourage and increase the number of revenue streams that are available to producers so that they can benefit from the sale of crops or the sale of livestock. But they also can have other revenue streams available to them.
So a number of the things that, you know, you mentioned all these programs, these USDA efforts, some of them encouraging private sector investment, but some of them are looking at, you know, you mentioned the disaster relief, some of the assistance there. Some of that will require correspondence with USDA officials either in Washington or on the ground in county offices across the country. Does USDA have the workforce, have the people it needs to help producers with those programs, or are there gaps that you're going to need to fill?
Well, we absolutely have the staff in place. I mean, as always, you know, as federal departments and agencies, you know, we are trying to build up capacity as much as we can, but we have the staff available, and I'm glad you mentioned those field offices throughout the country. We have staff in those offices who are working. We have not lost productivity in terms of being able to get the information out across the countryside, and we're going to continue to ensure that there are people who are there when someone has a question and they want to make connections on these programs. that we have staff available to answer those questions and provide those resources.
We'll be right back to discuss the future of USDA's Equity Commission with Deputy Secretary Jewel Bernal right after this.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together, we celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. USDA's Equity Commission recently finalized a set of interim recommendations for the Department of Agriculture to consider. USDA Deputy Secretary Jewel Bernal was the co-chair of that commission, and she says those recommendations will be taken seriously at the department.
That's something that's really been a lot of my key work since I've been with the department, and we had our fourth commission meeting last week here in Washington. It was actually our first time that we had an opportunity to hear initial thoughts on recommendations from the newly formed Rural Community and Economic Development Subcommittee. But we also deliberated and voted on interim recommendations presented by the Ag Subcommittee. So we're now finalizing the interim report that we expect to release later this month. I just have to say, you know, there's been a lot of great discussion. We have a very passionate Equity Commission, Rural Community Economic Development Subcommittee, and Ag Subcommittee. They're passionate individuals, and I just want to applaud those members and thank them for the hard work and their dedication over the past year. We're really excited about the progress, and we're looking forward to reviewing these interim recommendations that we expect the commission to finalize. We're going to deliver those to the secretary, and then USDA is going to closely review the commission's proposed recommendations and respond in short order. We know that, you know, there's some things that we need to respond to immediately. Others will require congressional action and perhaps farm bill actions. But I really feel like these final recommendations that are forthcoming and the interim recommendations are going to put us in a position to determine the right strategies to implement these various recommendations. And we look forward to this continued work. You know, I am positive that USDA is going to work to advance equity and build a USDA that is truly, truly inclusive of underserved communities.
So understanding then that this final report is still in the works of, you know, actual finalization, understanding that you as the co-chair are set to depart the agency at the end of the month, what then does that mean for the future of this commission itself?
This commission will go on, and let me be clear about that. This is a major priority of the secretary and of USDA. So the work will go on. I've worked alongside co-chair Arturo Rodriguez. We will name, prior to me leaving, another co-chair, and this work will continue. This is about making change, so we cannot stop now. And so we are now looking towards how we can move the recommendations to action. And I think that's what the interim recommendations are going to empower us to start doing in terms of decision making. But the work will continue. It's not based on me. It is more than just me, and I'm really excited about my role that I've been able to take to get this going.
Should we expect that next commission co-chair to be, you know, perhaps the next deputy secretary at USDA or even necessarily someone within the department?
Well, we haven't made a decision yet. So I can't answer that question, but I will say that we will announce the next co-chair prior to me leaving.
So looking back then at what you were able to accomplish during your time at the Department of Agriculture, as you mentioned, you plan to depart here at the end of the month. But looking back on the last couple of years that you've been in the agency, were you able to accomplish what you set out to do?
I was. I mean, everyone thinks and knows that they could do more. We all want to do more. I will say for me personally, serving in the Biden-Harris administration and having this opportunity to make history alongside Secretary Vilsack has been an honor for me. You know, I'm I'm in awe of what, as a department, we've accomplished in these first 2 years. And then even for my job, I'm actually, as the deputy, I'm the COO of USDA. So have been very focused on the internal staff and the USDA workforce. And, you know, we want to make USDA the best place to work in the federal government. And so working with this workforce and, you know, just seeing and trying to help people come up through leadership and just benefiting from the wisdom and dedication of the folks at USDA has certainly been a privilege for me. And so I know that USDA will continue the work that has started. And I'm just honored to have been a part of what we were able to accomplish in the last 2 years.
Deputy Secretary Jill Bernau, thanks for joining us, and best of luck in your next steps and your time after USDA.
Thank you so much.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, our Hannah Pagel dives into USDA's farm income forecast in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
USDA's most recent income forecast is projecting big drops in net farm income this year. The new data comes as Congress prepares to write the next farm bill and study whether or not reforms are needed in the farm safety net. High commodity prices can often lead to calls for cuts to farmer support programs. This chart shows the U.S. net farm income and net cash farm income adjusted for inflation from 2002 to the projected totals for 2023. Net cash farm income is the green line. It's based on cash receipts from farming, plus government payments and other farm-related income, minus cash expenses. It's estimated to fall about 20% to $150.6 billion this year. The blue line is net farm income, which is a broader measure of profits after production expenses. It's forecast at just under $137 billion in 2023, a decline of almost 16% from 2022. While both figures are down this year, USDA's projections are still well above 20-year averages. Philip Brasher takes a deeper dive into the report in his coverage on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Don't miss the must-attend policy event of the year. Register now for the 2023 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. This year, we'll focus on next-gen food and farm policy as we examine the forward-looking ideas that will drive policy discussions for this year and the decades ahead. The summit takes place on March 20th at the National Press Club in Washington and through our virtual experience. Take advantage of early bird rates until February 15th. Register today under the Events tab at AgriPulse.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we are going to continue our conversation on the farm economy and a various other array of farm policy issues with this week's panel. Joined by Scott Gerlt with the American Soybean Association and Mary Kay Thatcher with Syngenta. Appreciate both of you taking the time to join us here today. And Mary Kay, I want to go to you first, because this week we did see President Joe Biden issue his State of the Union address, a long list of policy things that he would like to accomplish over the next year, as well as recounting many of the things that have happened thus far in his administration. And kind of throughout the speech, there was, you know, let's finish the job, let's get the job done. A lot of calls for bipartisanship between the administration and Capitol Hill in his remarks. From the outside looking in, what are you going to be watching to determine whether or not those calls are being heeded and progress is being made on those fronts?
Well, I think I'm going to be watching a lot whether any or all of the 19 or 20 members that made it so difficult for Kevin McCarthy to be elected speaker indeed follow through on some of these things. And I think we may have already had an indication of that, Spencer, in the letter from the five very right-wing Republicans who said we want to put a work requirement on SNAP. Again, when you remember that Kevin McCarthy can only lose four Republican votes before something happens, there's a letter with five. That's a pretty clear indication that they can use the new setup in the Rules Committee, and they can make life pretty difficult on some of these amendments. Certainly, we would anticipate that the Farm Bill would continue to be bipartisan as it has before, not to say there won't be disagreements between the House and the Senate side, but I'm hoping and I'm watching very carefully, and I think we see lots of good signs of that bipartisanship. Again, if you think back to a very recent example, you had Debbie Stabenow saying, hey, I'm not interested in taking that $20 billion in the Inflation Reduction Act and moving it somewhere else. And immediately afterwards, you had John Bozeman as the ranking member saying, yeah, I don't think it's going anywhere with a Democratic House and a Democratic president.
Well, Mary Kay, you mentioned that letter from the five conservative Republicans talking about work requirements. And obviously, that is enough to sink a farm bill without any Democratic support. But Chairman Thompson saying this week he plans to move a farm bill with Democratic support. But a number of other issues that could be a lot more partisan in nature. You think about the debt ceiling. You think about government funding. Are you expecting any of that partisan infighting to potentially bleed into farm bill deliberations?
I think it very well could. You know, you think back to the 2014 Farm Bill, and in 2011, we ran into the same kind of a debt ceiling situation we're in now. And it ended up that I think it was $23 billion in cuts that the ag committees had to take before they could pass that 2014 Farm Bill to meet the debt limit ceiling. So, you know, I know the Democrats are pretty hard on we're going to pass a clean bill. We're not going to have any cuts in spending included. I think the Republicans are equally adamant on the other side. There will be some. And I have to believe in the end, there's some kind of a coming together. Now, whether it's a significant decision on, okay, I'm going to really cut money, or whether it's, oh, okay, we'll jointly agree to have some commission study it for a while, I think way too early to tell. But certainly that debt limit vote is going to drive a lot of decisions in this town.
Scott, bringing you into the fold here and kind of taking things off Capitol Hill for a second, we saw farm income figures from the Department of Agriculture this week showing a drop in government payments, government supports this year, as well as a drop in overall farm income. From an economic standpoint, what is that telling you about the role of government supports in the overall farm income picture?
Yeah, Spencer, great question. And, you know, we've been fortunate to have high farm income for several years, you know, higher crop prices, higher government payments during that time. But as you mentioned, you know, there's several things that are could push that back down in 2023 under the forecast. Lower crop prices are one of the big factors. But as you mentioned, lower government payments, you know, going from, you know, $40, $45 billion in direct government spending a few years ago to just over 10. This will be the lowest amount of direct government payments since 1982 in those projections. So it's quite a change, and it's really showing how the farm safety net is decreasing outlays. Even though we had record government spending on farm programs payments a few years ago, almost all that was ad hoc. About 70% over that 2018 to 2021 timeframe was ad hoc spending. And we've just continually seen Farm Bill Title I spending declining through time. And so I think as we're going into this Farm Bill year, I think it shows the importance of having new money into the Title I program, just because, you know, we're having that declining farm safety net. We've seen the top turn in farm income, and, you know, we'd love to see the farm income stay high. But, you know, as we saw about a decade ago, after some low yields, that farm income went down and stayed down for quite a while.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Scott Gerlt with the American Soybean Association says while Tuesday's forecast from the Department of Agriculture may have predicted a drop in farm income, other factors in that report will also play into farm bill discussions.
There's a lot of ways. I mean, we've also seen quite a bit of conversation about costs. I mean, costs are going up. We're seeing that in the new farm income numbers as well. You know, fortunately, fuel prices have gone down a little bit in the 23 projections. But fertilizer is coming down some, but remains high. Interest costs are high. So there's been talk about, you know, different types of margin programs or a way to incorporate costs more in there. So there are other ways. I mean, farm income is still high, you know, but I think what people need to recognize is that farm income is high now, but you don't write Title I programs for good conditions. We're writing it to be a safety net if things go worse in the future. You know, if we start having that period after kind of that post 2012, 2013 time again, where we had a lot lower farm income, we had a trade war. And I think that's kind of what we need to be focused on as we write the Title I programs.
Well, writing those Title I programs and more as we look at the upcoming farm bill here, Mary Kay, and that's where I want to bring things in and wrap up our conversation with you. I know a lot of folks have said that there is a strong desire to move a farm bill yet this year before the end of September. Obviously, a very, very abbreviated timeline to do hearings, markups, conferences, all that fun stuff. What are the signals that you're going to be watching that will tell you whether or not a farm bill could, in fact, pass this year?
Again, I think, Spencer, it all comes down to money. I mean, you know, when the CBO comes out with their baseline that will tell us what's the amount of money we have to write a new farm bill. And then, of course, we have the debt limit. So until we know, as Scott said, whether we're going to have more money to increase the safety net, improve the safety net via new money through the budget committee, through not having a debt limit, cut spending, et cetera. You know, we can have all the hearings in the world, but we can't really get down to the brass tacks of writing it until we know that funding. And so I think it's all going to be driven by how soon do we hit the debt limit? How quickly do we deal with that? What happens with the CBO baseline? I'm afraid I'm not a believer we're going to finish this by October 1st. I hope those who say we are right. I think they're very sincere. But I think when we're getting answers so late in the year on what kind of money we're really going to have, it's going to be almost impossible to finish a farm bill by October 1st.
So a number of things to watch to keep track of whether or not that, in fact, will be something that happens, whether or not they're going to pass if it doesn't happen by the end of September, is it a 3-month extension? Is it a 1-year extension? We'll be keeping an eye on all of those various things, as will Mary Kay and Scott. And thanks to the both of you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pegel takes a look at the nation's conservation acreage in this week's Map It Out.
The Conservation Reserve Program is one of the largest private lands conservation programs in the country. Farmers and landowners voluntarily participate in the program by removing land that's environmentally sensitive from agricultural production. This USDA map shows the acres enrolled in CRP across the country in November 2022. Colorado, Texas, and South Dakota have the most land in the program, and nearly 23 million acres are enrolled in the program across the country. CRP was introduced in the 1985 Farm Bill. That bill authorized USDA to enroll up to 45 million acres in CRP, but actual enrollment has never exceeded 37 million acres. The current cap is 27 million acres. The Inflation Reduction Act provided about $20 billion for working lands conservation programs, but did not allocate money specifically for CRP. As Congress prepares to write the next farm bill, expect the CRP acreage cap and USDA's efforts to grow the program to be a major point of debate. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pegel.
Don't miss the must-attend policy event of the year. Register now for the 2023 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. This year, we'll focus on next-gen food and farm policy as we examine the forward-looking ideas that will drive policy discussions for this year and the decades ahead. The summit takes place on March 20th at the National Press Club in Washington and through our virtual experience. Take advantage of early bird rates until February 15th. Register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together, we celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. I'm headed to New Orleans for the annual gathering of the National Association of Conservation Districts. The House Ag Committee will convene a listening session in Tulare, California as part of the World Ag Expo, and our Sarah Wyant is at the annual crop insurance get-together in Florida. Stay tuned to AgriPulse.com for all of this and more. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one. Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.